has all the magic. Here we go. We have a call to order. We see that I think everybody's here today. So great. Looking for public comment this morning.
Anyone? Anyone?
I'm looking, and I see no one. You know, it is an early hour, and I don't blame a lot of you. Actually, it's early, but if you have something to say, just know. Grab a cup of coffee. Come on down. There's plenty of front row seats for next month. All right. We'll have to now take a look at the minutes. Approval of the minutes for last month's meeting. I wasn't there. I've read them. But I'll let the others find any inaccuracies.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes of last month.
No. Just a moment. I think we have a member present who wasn't present.
Well, that's I think, a typo on their part. Yeah, that should be a member absent. So we will note that. Because I wasn't there. And I admitted that early on.
What do you mean, no, no? I can make a motion to approve it if I want to.
Not yet.
It's true. Then we'd have comment.
I had one comment, so I'll make the motion to approve the minutes as corrected.
Corrected. Seconded.
No way.
I'll second.
Discussion. No, okay. All right. Good for you, Kathleen. Yeah. This is a million laughs. I haven't even had coffee this morning. All right. Then in that case, the motion's on the floor to approve the minutes as corrected by Mr. Krovitz. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. We'll take a look at that. And now we've done that. We'll go to the visitor center report, which brings Mr. Candela here. And this is, I know, going to be a juicy one because we got so much
all
coming
up. All kinds of stuff going on, as usual. But this is, we call it Hell Week because there's just so much going on this week to prepare for the festival coming up this Saturday. I'll go over the report first real quick. It's in your packets. The 800 numbers are pretty self-explanatory. It looks like we have 18. Again, there's actually three 800 numbers here. One is to the one that we've been using for years and years. It's the 800 to the visitor center. And then we have come up with two test 800 numbers that we put into advertisement to check and see what kind of responses we get. You can see last month it was kind of shy on seven or eight calls, and it looks like we have 19. So there's some activity in that 6-8-16. I'm not sure which advertisement that is in. We can maybe look at that a little closer, but I'm not sure which one that it went into. So there's some activity there. The chamber is just phone calls are amazing, how many phone calls we've had this week regarding all kinds of things. But primarily it was for the festival coming up, and I'll get into that here in a minute. We're not going to include the web stats. John has a more detailed analysis of that. But you can see the phone calls have gone up slightly from last year, August of 06 to August 07. And the visitors are down. But I think that it's really contributed to the fact that the website has so much more activity. It's easier to access information. I don't think it indicates there's less people coming in. Because it isn't. I think there's more people coming in. But far as the visitor center goes, I think the drop is due to accessibility to our website. And everything else is pretty self-explanatory. You can see that we have a lot of activity in the SLO VCB pack that goes out, 198 to year to date, 153 for August, and a total of 263. Of total of mail-outs. If I can, I'd like to go into the into our event coming up this weekend. There's more to the event than just the event itself. We started this about a year ago, and what we wanted to do with the avocados, it was to showcase basically our growers in our area. Quite frankly, I didn't know how many growers there were. I know that we had a substantial amount. But once we started to check into it, we discovered that there was an excess of 40 to 50 local growers in our area. And then when we started checking into it a little further, we noticed some details about them. Number one, our fruit, the avocado grown in our area takes 14 months to grow. What that means to us is that the fruit is actually higher in oil content, the good oil content, and it's a fruit that lasts a little longer because it doesn't hit its peak and then dry out like a lot of hot climates do. We have a freeze that happened, which really a cool event in more ways than one. Getting into that, I think just that alone, I think people are really going to discover how deep our growers really are in our area and how substantial they are to the market. They'll be selling them too, and this is our local, because they're not all of them were ruined. There's a lot of them that still have fruit, so they'll be selling our local fruit there. And on top of that, we have all the other things, which of course is the other side, which is the margaritas. We have a lot of the city staff that's going to participate in helping us pour those margaritas. We also have a lot of volunteers. I can't go through. We needed 60. I have to tell you, people came out of the woodwork to help us. And I have a list of all these places, and I filled just about every single one of them. I'm so proud of everyone for participating into this. And of course, we have food. My goodness, there's so much food. We call one section of our food court restaurant row or sample row, because it's actually quite a few of the restaurants are going to sample some of their avocado dishes there that for free that you could go in, and they're going to give you menus. You'll be able to talk to them about their restaurant, and you know, maybe that's where you want to go for dinner afterwards. And of course, we have a whole row of purchased food that will be there. We have wine, we'll have beer, we have three bands. Trilogy is one, Prior Bear and the Deacons is the other, and the Guy Bud Band, who's I believe they're both playing at the Harbor Festival. They also played for us at the 4th of July. So the music is going to be great. You're going to be able to dance. You're going to be able to listen if you want. You can participate in all of the other things. We have contests. The best guacamole, which is a restaurant-only contest. We have the best avocado base recipe for the people here in town. And, of course, the kids, we can't forget the kids. They're going to be able to decorate an avocado and bring it in, kind of like a Mr. Potato Head, I guess. And there'll be prizes for each one of them. Actually, some of the artists have made some replicas of avocados and the artwork, and they're donating them to our first place prize, which I think is very cool.
Is there anyone in an avocado suit?
Good thing you said that. Boy, you just laid right in there. Good script writing. Yeah, we do. We have an avocado mascot.
The only question, John, is for the website or for the video reel, just anyone walking the streets of Morro Bay dressed as an avocado sounds like an image.
And it's a 6-foot avocado, I might add.
There you go.
It's
a hoss or a quirk?
Yeah, we'll see, because I haven't actually seen the suit yet. It's actually Jan Thomas, our membership director, is going to be in that suit all day, which is pretty cool.
Well, you know,
that's a pitch.
we'll have a straight line for Ed today. That's good.
If you want to continue the exposure, I know that because we have a client that's going to be doing this, and it's there's a mascot race up in Paso Robles on Sunday through the Fun Run.
I understand she's quite the athlete, so we may have to enter her in this.
Yeah, you might have to put her in that race.
That's it. I'll get more details afterwards.
That'd be my next question, though. Has there been any outreach? I mean, it's not like a tall ship where one can call KSBY and have pictures, but has there been, like with the kites, any attempt to get media because there's something visual?
David, we have contacted, honestly, I've probably been on, well, not probably, I have been on four radio stations talking about this, from Dave Coggleton to King Harris to Amy and Bill to the Big Kahuna. I mean, they were contacting us and they want to be part of this.
There was a real nice article yesterday in the Tribune. Bill Coy,
that's right,
and stuff talking about the festival.
So not even one negative thing about it. It was very positive. Great twist all the way around. Very positive. Everything about this is extremely positive. I want to keep it that way. Of course, every event require sponsorship, and ours certainly has an abundance of them. We have the Circle of Excellence, which is one of our prime sponsors, groups, and I'd just like to run through them real quick. It's Albertsons, Andrea Klepfeldt, Edward Jones, Coast Electronics, Dynergy, Morro Bay Power Plant, Embarcadero Inn, Glassworks, Goofy Graphics, Hay Printing, Mackey and Mackey Insurance, Midstate Bank and Trust, Morro Bay Furniture, Rose's Steak and Fish House, Sierra Vista Hospital, and Windows on the Water. We have two event sponsors, which Pacific Beverage Company, and it there's actually two more that just came on board. The other one is Culligan. They're donating 100 gallons of water. Margaritas take a lot of water. And tequila
to wash
well,
down.
Yeah, right, that's right. And then we have Bottle Liquors. It's the first time that they participate in anything that we have, and they're very excited about being part of our whole. Tonight we have a mixer at Garden. Gosh, I went blank. Sorry.
No, I think just people interacting with the person dressed like a giant avocado. I think you can't really top. Well, on reality television, you probably could top that, but I think it's a good one. So.
How about holding guacamole?
There you go.
We'll hold off on that one.
I would suggest hitting him early.
Yeah.
Or at least have two different groups.
Yeah. And anyway, I just think that might be
one might require a little more editing.
A good addition to our video resume on the city. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Candela. Take a look at the budget report now. Of course, the budget's showing a lot of blank lines at this point early in the year. In fact, showing that most of what it is that we have still remains. And so I think at this point, I don't know, but the thing I would suggest is that we get the detailed, which is on its way around, budget from Mr. Sorgan Fry before I could even finish.
There we go. Get this one up.
More.
Yeah, we're in the process of beginning our media placement. We had several things that have been committed to. As you can see, I won't run down line by line. Some of this occurred actually last month as well. But to date, we've spent close to $28,000. Some of the activity is a email newsletter that went out to the LA Times in promoting not only the Margarita Festival, but Harbor Festival.
Your mic on, John?
Yes. Working. Now it is. But that was designed so we could promote those two events as well as overall promotion for the city. We're getting involved in the, as Peter mentioned, we had a collaborative effort on the public relations. We sent out a number of press releases in addition to what the city did, also into the valley. So we were able to get quite a bit of coverage. The both events now are on the website. The one of the changes was the California State Visitor's Guide. It worked out budget-wise because we originally had an Audubon ad, which the county is not going to be doing. So I elected, since we were on a deadline, to put those dollars, because the Visitor's Guide went up to some degree, but that's been placed. And that's the California State Visitor's Guide. That's a co-op. The good news is that we have less partners in that ad, so the price went up, but there's also less people to share it with, so we have more exposure. And I think that's pretty much it for the budget.
And you said what happened with the Audubon?
excuse me, the county elected not to offer that this year.
We co-opted that big ad with the county VCB last year, and this year they didn't do it, so that opportunity wasn't there.
Is the ad the same as it was last year, or what did we put in?
For the State Visitor's Guide?
Yes.
It's the picture that was on the Our Destination Guide. And we have very little copy. There's only just a line of copy that goes with that ad since it's a co-op. But our website's there. Basically, the only copy we could put in is Discover Your Better Nature.
So it's basically a new ad.
Right.
Okay.
You might bring us
it's
a copy.
It's a formatted ad. I mean, basically, we give them a picture. We give them the line. They make the ad. So that ad hasn't even been developed yet.
Do you end up getting a copy of the guide down the road, John?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could bring it
sure,
to us when it comes out.
I'll get a proof of the ad, too. I'll bring that. But it's fairly cut and dry because it's all it's formatted to everybody has the same amount of space, but it gives us great exposure because that ad by itself, if we wanted to run, say, a half page, would be $15,000. So it'd be pretty cost prohibitive for us if we didn't share it.
Do you have the email went out? How long does it for LA Times? How long does it take to get some feedback from that, as far as some, you know, numbers and tracking stuff?
I should be able to. I'll certainly have it by the next meeting.
Okay.
It usually takes a few weeks, and they'll give us a report, and they'll show how many were opened, how many got sent, how many actually went to our website. So I'll provide that too.
And then we'll be able to see a spike, if not already, in our hopefully in our sign-up.
Well, hopefully that's generated some of the calls to the visitor center in regards to the festival too. If you, Bob, if you could put that, it's the newsletter.
Well, Bob's doing that. I was going to tell you, Peter, that, and I make mention of this last week, I think, at the business forum, but we're now up to 5 rooms that we have sold as a direct result of having the Avocado Margarita Festival poster in our lobby.
Wow, just a poster?
Mm-hmm. So we've had 5 people that were staying with us that have rebooked for this weekend because of the festival. So
I think it's fantastic.
We didn't have that happen at the Kite Festival, you know. I mean, so that's
even offering deals too, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's pretty good.
Something's working. I know, John. Just input something here. Most of the calls that were coming in, something must have happened in L.A. because we were getting so many calls from L.A. Even down as far as San Diego. I think the AAA picked it up somehow and has it have it in theirs their monthly. And we had a call from San Diego saying that 47,
you know, still gives us. We talk about first about how September is a great time to come. The tourists have gone and the weather is some of our best of the year. So it's just encouraging people to come in the start of the off season. If you could put up that Bird Festival ad while we're at it, that would be good. And this was a new ad that we did. This is for Birders World. We ran the same ad a couple of times and thought it would be nice to do a new design. This is actually my new artist. My previous artist had been with me for about 5 years, decided to move to the Bay Area. But I was lucky to find somebody really good. And actually, she's also a good copywriter. So now I have somebody that can help us with copy but also do the graphics. And just give it a new kind of a new look.
Nice.
Yeah. Do you want me to go on with my report then to the next item?
Well, let's take a quick look here. I have a question about that. Is it worth trying to find, I mean, losing the Audubon? I don't know, between Birders World and Audubon, what would be the most likely source of promoting the festivals? Have we ever sent a DVD or something for the advertorial kind of thing to Audubon?
They're on our list as far as the for our PR list, so they have received material in the past. But yeah, there's it would be, again, with the budget, you know, we're already actually had to dip into our contingency to do the state guide, but I got a real strong feeling from everybody that, you know, on the budget committee that we definitely want to do that ad. But yeah, through PR we can certainly try to promote it that way too. And I know the Bird Festival itself does quite a bit of outreach on its own. But we'll certainly coordinate with them and make sure that happens.
I'd say that because that's one of the few really prime ecotourism events that we actually get to call an ecotourism event. Though I don't know how the margarita one could be spun into avocado. What made me think of that and actually came back to the conference we went to in San Luis. All this talk you had about the farmers and the growing and all, does this become something we can call an agritourism or a culinary tourism? If we could begin to divide it up into
absolutely
those other things so we could sort of put that in our quiver of... Mm-hmm. Events. I guess it's both. It's agri and it's culinary, right? It's
well, I think it's certainly both. One of our judges will be the commission for is the Agricultural Commission. So they're going to be judging the contest. So yeah, it's great representation.
Yeah, I think that you guys did a great job on picking the theme, because the nice thing about it is that, you know, certainly the margarita aspect of it's fun, but yet the avocado, the agritourism part of it is really kind of unique too. So there's a little something for everybody. Gives it a nice.
You know, what's so interesting about it is that we knew that you go down 41 and you see the avocados there and you just kind of drive by and, you know, a lot of avocados, but. When you get into it and you see this substantial amount of growers in our area, I was just amazed. And the quality of the fruit, you know, when they start explaining all this, and I have to tell you, we get calls from the growers every single day now. Not just calls, they come in, and they they all want to have booths now, but you know, unfortunately, we have 50 vendors, you know, so there's no place to put them this year. But next year, if this is, you know, what I think it's going to be huge next year with their support.
It's great.
Yeah.
David, could we talk about the TOT taxes before we move to John's report?
Yes, about the TOT. Oh, okay.
I'm sure Ed can.
This may be the number issue. This is a number issue that didn't make sense to you?
Well, no. Well, I mean, yes, I guess. Yes and no. It says that motel rooms went from 616 to 906, which I know we opened one.
Those numbers, to me, those numbers have never hardly ever meant anything, and I don't know why they're so inaccurate, why they're so inconsistent.
You're quite right, Heather. I went back and checked a year ago, and those aren't the numbers on the report from last year, but Ed was explaining these numbers can vary based
right,
on late reporting.
Right, because they'll go back and, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just, I mean, obviously our TOT increased substantially, I would say.
It's actually, and I can, the thing is that I know from past experience that you may look the last year's numbers as when you're looking at the whole year like we have in front of us today for last year. If you were to go back like David did and look at our report that was in our packet this time last year, the numbers are different than they show today. But that's because the city makes adjustments as they go through the year, and they'll go back and readjust figures. And I don't know if that's to match general ledger as they move through the year, because this is actually the money that they took in, not necessarily the general ledger report from the city official general ledger. So the only thing that we've always done is we've used what's put before us.
Right.
So, you know, using those numbers, and it made, although it's a huge difference, I thought it made sense because of what I experienced this in July for my business, and thinking that I usually follow what the cities as a whole does, and we're looking at a 70,000 over them. It's changing,
right?
But I can tell you that the occupancy rates, which we are supposed to report, I think that's subjective. I mean, it shouldn't be. But I'm just thinking that's mm-hmm. you know, you can't always count on that. Although, in some ways, it makes sense to me because if we added a new property, the Morrill Shores,
sure.
which 29.
29, okay.
Which isn't huge. But so what happens is that if you see the occupancy rate stay roughly the same, and you see our TOT numbers go up and sales went up. Yes, some of it's about the rate, maybe, but a lot of it, what happens is that we actually did get more people here because of the Morrill Shores. Otherwise, you would have seen our occupancy rate go way down because of Morrill Shores. But they stayed up with the rest of us, therefore the occupancy stayed about the same, which ends up being more revenue. Mm-hmm. So
that is the interesting thing, too. Although these numbers on rooms and dollars seem to change, if you go back, as I did the last 2 years, the occupancy rates for July look exactly the same.
Huh.
So,
I would love to celebrate the fact that we're up so high in our TOT. I just don't want that to be, you know, untruthful celebration.
I don't think it is,
okay.
To be honest
good.
With you. And I think that you're going to see even the same, not same percentage, but you're going to see a substantial increase next month when August comes out.
Great.
Because August is just wonderful here.
And I think we can attribute that undoubtedly to the impacts of global warming on the rest of Southern California. And let's face it, I get calls from people who were melting everywhere else. Well, how is it in Morro Bay? So it's about 67.
Yeah.
And that seems to work. As I pointed out, Dad, that'll be a very good thing for our future business until the sea level rise kicks in on the Embarcadero, which will be, so the idea is milk it while you can.
But there's another tourist attraction.
Oh, well, you know. No.
You know?
The lost city of the Embarcadero. It'd be a great diving experience.
Well, yeah. Or it means this. Go ahead and build a conference center at the old Tri-W site, because that will be waterfront property in 25 years.
Nice try.
Okay.
can, instead of ships to reefs, we can have shops to reefs.
Yeah. There you go.
You know, it's like
shops to reefs. I like that. And it's funny, because with all those maritime souvenirs, they'll think every store will be called Davy Jones Locker. The tie-ins are almost unbelievable.
But I actually, one part of this is very true, though, because when I know in past experiences, when it's hot in the valley, we had a very hot summer in the valley, we see there... we see the success of that, of the people coming to us. And when it's mild, we also see that.
You know what, though, then? So, like David said, though, Southern California this year was, when it gets hot down there, it's bad hot because of the smog and stuff. So it just, they flocked up here. And the same with the desert. We saw a big increase from Palm Springs this year. We saw quite an increase in Arizona, people coming from Arizona. So. And they stay a long time. They don't want to go home.
Well, again, I've said it before, like in our last meeting, that I think with the San Luis Obispo Airport's expansion and bringing in, you know, people from Arizona direct flights, but this whole thing with Salt Lake City, I think could really have a big impact for us, because that really makes it very viable for people to come from all over the United States now, because that is such a huge hub. We just need to get them from the airport to here.
Yep.
Which is the problem, of course, we've had. We can't even get Amtrak to bring them from the train station to here. But, yeah, that's would be the stumbling block.
But I think what will happen is the demand will create the service. I mean, that's really what it will come down to. If it's viable for somebody to pick people up at the airport and bring them here, there'll be a business for that.
Kind of like the airport expanding to begin with. If they didn't think there was market out there, they wouldn't have done it.
Well, and all the flights have been successful. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a proven entity. I mean, Delta's doing great, evidently, from what I read.
Maybe someday they'll actually go back to flying to Sacramento again. You
know? I think there's
really,
talk about
really
that.
Welcome. Yeah. Boy, would that be. Welcome.
And Portland.
So then, do you want to go on with the
sure.
All right, advertising report?
Well, I think I've done a little bit of it. We've seen the most recent ads that we've done. I'll go ahead and do the website. And as you can see here, again, this is always sort of deceiving because we're always looking at a half of a month. So when you look at this graph, you really have to kind of look at it from the previous. Now, we did go down a little bit from July into August with the website hits, but we're still very, very solid. We've got total user sessions of over 20,000. We had 22 signups for the newsletter. I think the nice thing is that our average page views are over 5.5 minutes, which means people are really spending some time on the site. Average length of time on site is over 10 minutes. And if you go on to the next page,
John, it's just got to be content, isn't it? Because, I mean, to spend 10 minutes on the website, either they're just struggling with not being able to video.
I'm sure we can. I know that I have one client that we do that for, and we're able to get that statistic. I'll talk to Jeremy. I know that one of the things that I was going to mention is that I sat down with Jeremy, and we've tweaked some of the reporting that, and it's going to come out of my budget for him doing the website, but we've got some new reporting that you'll see next month that'll even be more detailed. But I'll see if we can do that as part of that. But we'll be able to even pinpoint down more even precisely who's looking and what they're seeing. And
when you talk about plan a trip being a real highly visited part of the website, then if the videos. If it stuck out like that, then you'd be reporting that, wouldn't you? Because isn't that another component?
I'll have to see if it's one that is on there. If not, then it would certainly be a good one to know.
I mean,
because
like
strange,
David,
though, it may not be a place that you land in a sense, because all it does is activate like a media player. It's not really a landing.
Right. So it would be nice to have an explanation of that 10 minutes, you know, user session.
Okay.
If we can.
Sure.
On your top pages, you get plan a trip listed 3 times.
Yeah, I don't know why that is.
Well, that's plan a trip. Really plan a trip and make sure you've planned the trip.
Almost planned.
Almost planned the trip.
I'll find out why that's the case.
You pay it up.
But through the figures, too.
60, 53.
Yeah. Actually, I think the occurrence of that has couple different ways to get to it.
Yeah, that might be a possibility
and you get
too.
One from the homepage and you
right.
Get one from the
if that's the case, then it's even more. But I'll find out why that's the case. Then, if you look down below, you'll see where we're still doing really well with no referrals, which basically helps support our ad reach because basically these are people that are actually going in and typing worldbay.org, and we had over 45% doing that. then if you go to the last page, well, actually, the last page is the no referral page. I'm sorry, it's 56%. So more than half of the people are coming to us through just our website. And one of the other things that I just did with New Image Technology, who hosts our site, is we implanted in some new keywords that will come up on Google. So like for kayaking, bird watching, you know, it needs to need to go in and enhance that every once in a while. So we just did that recently. So that should continue to have our have a strong position on the search engines.
Is ecotourism considered a search word?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of them.
Those two might be, there might be a phrase rather than a word, but either way, if you have that as part of your background stuff,
right. And let's see. One of the things I can show you, too, is that we've been working on the parking map. And I think Bob has a smaller version of it, but I'll pass this around. It's fairly detailed. And this has taken quite a few different passes, trying to incorporate a lot of different things onto this one map. But I think we finally got it to a point where it's getting pretty close. It'll still probably need some revisions. But basically, what we wanted to do was to work on a map that not only had it turned out that we're not only going to show where the parking, free parking is, but also show the trolley routes. Because the trolley, as I think we had a presentation a few months ago, they really needed some collateral material, but didn't really have the budget for it. So this will actually do two things. It will provide people with the opportunity to know where the civic buildings are, the schools, the parking, golf courses, campgrounds, parks. And what we plan to do with this is we can make this available to all the different entities that could utilize it, but also put it on the website. And this would be a tool for everybody to, and it's also a great map. So, you know, we also try to have the ability that somebody could download this and print it on themselves and bring it with them when they come to the city. I know I really like that feature. Whenever I travel someplace where I'm not real familiar, it's great to bring take a map with you that you can just get from the website.
I've been watching, seeing a few of the emails, but I haven't really seen a bottom line one from Janine or Bruce with regards to what they think of this. You know, it's kind of been add this or could we do that?
Right.
Have you gotten any feedback?
No, I haven't got. I think I sent it to you and to Bruce. I'm not sure if I sent it to her, but I figured he would forward it on to her. But yeah, that's the next step is to have all three, you know, people look at it and just give me any final input. I know you gave me a couple of things that we tweaked.
Yeah, this
between
is
now and then.
This is really the legend is for both the trolley routes and stuff is terrific. You know, would also doing it on 8.5 by 14 like this can make a nice threefold. Mm-hmm. If the city ends up wanting to put a cover,
right?
You know, the on the back side of this for printing purposes, it'd make a nice tool compared to what they have now. To be honest mm-hmm. with you, I think this is wonderful, and this needs to be on our website. So what do you? Are you kind of waiting to hear back before we, because there's mm-hmm. no sense in having three different versions out there in the world. So once something's settled on, mm-hmm. then we'll go ahead and launch a page on
sure.
it or stuff. Okay.
And then I was thinking that we probably don't have the budget for it this year unless we don't spend our contingency money. But I was thinking that, and I know I brought this up a couple of meetings ago, it'd be really nice to have a trail map. Maybe we could combine the trail map with a mountain biking map, you know, so there's bike trails and hiking trails. Because, again, it gets back to what are our unique features here, and we've got some great hiking trails. And that would just be another piece of collateral for the visitor center. So if somebody comes in and they're interested, you know, where can I go hiking, we'd have a nice little map. And I don't think it has to be very sophisticated or, you know, very expensive. It would just be, you know, some nice, clean piece that would show the various trails. But if we wanted to get started on it, I guess the first thing that I would need is, you know, where the trails are. And
well,
if we have anything
Bob,
existing
do you,
like that.
You do have internet access. You went ahead and did that, didn't you? Not to plug, but would you go to, why don't you go to embarcaderoin.com for me real quick?
John?
Yes.
I have a question if we need
and
more
activities.
No longer exists.
And if you go to like hiking.
It's not a public school any longer.
Okay. Okay.
And I think somewhere.
Yeah, if you want to just either.
If we have it up, I wonder if we have it up yet.
That'd be great.
What we have is while we describe the hiking areas and stuff, we actually have a map
that we're in the we have them at the front desk now for hiking, biking, and those kinds of things. But what we are going to do is make those maps available to download, which we hadn't done in the past. They're part of our activities binders. But I'm not sure where Christy got all that stuff when we did this a few years ago. But you're more than welcome. I mean, why reinvent the wheel? There's all the a lot of the different hiking areas with the mileage and all that stuff. And
well, and it may be, too, that just because of the way the Internet works, maybe we don't even print it. You know, we can just have people download it. That would save a great deal on the cost.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, actually, what I was going to suggest is if everybody wouldn't mind taking a look at this map and then email me any thoughts that you have as far as corrections, like, for instance, the school. And then that way, then we could get kind of get everybody's comments all at once, and then I can make those changes, and then we'll have kind of a final map to look at.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I guess that one of the things that concerned me is that I guess if we're going to do, and this is something that I guess you have to work out with Bruce and Janine, from our standpoint, there's no need to show a school. You know, I'm just throwing that out. I don't see, from a tourist standpoint, I'm not sure that it's important to show a school. But if you're going to make one size fit all to try to do all the requirements that we're trying to accomplish, then absolutely we need to. So I think it's a
I'm sorry. I mean, I think that it's important to remember that our job is to get tourists to come here, but 85% of the people who buy homes here are from out of the area. And I think that just in terms of our local economy, that it does benefit us to kind of show the attributes of the community on a map like this, and a school would be one of them.
And I think that also played when I was hosting someone from the Bird Festival last year. He said, I got to go to the high school tonight. Can you give me directions to get there? Because they're holding one of their events at the high school. Or we've had the Jazz Festival use the auditorium at the high school. So maybe, like, for example, that would be a place that people have asked me, how do I get there to go see these events?
Right.
Or yeah, well, and indeed, sometimes the Bird Festival will use, like, a school or something to have a thing with the kids.
Right.
So maybe that might
but be good. I just think it's terrific. And I'll be, like, again, I look forward to see what the, how do you like this, Andrea?
Looks good. Looks good. I have a couple of suggestions, but otherwise I think it looks great. Pretty clear. Like the colors.
Yeah, I think it's neat.
Great. I was just going to bring up, getting back to the website for a moment, something I forgot to mention, that Peter and I are working together on working out a way to get a mass mailing done to ask people if they want to join the newsletter list. We talked about that. I know that was on the on part of the agenda. Frankly, I'll just be real honest with you. We've both been real busy promoting this festival and getting some of the other things done, but it is on our list. And we talked about one of the things to preserve that 5,000 names is to not just throw people in there that haven't been asked first. In fact, it's not even legal to do that. So what we wanted to do was make sure we invite people to be part of that. And so then we can increase our database for our email newsletter. There was one other thing that I had, and Ed, I think that we had talked just briefly about it. Councilman Pierce had an idea relative to kind of revamping our radio station, that we try to encourage visitors to tune into the radio to find out about different things happening in the city. And I think it kind of started with an email that I got from Bruce Ambo about how would we promote this, and there was just some ideas that I mentioned to him. And
I mean, it's kind of boring. I mean,
well, that's the point.
The Coast Guard puts its information
that's
on
what it
and
was.
You can
it was
barely
Coast Guard
understand
information.
It.
That's what it was.
Yeah, it's you barely can understand.
So
it's
who's
very dated?
Who manages it? I mean, who's?
I believe it's the police department
or the police is part really because it's actually
an emergency function,
right,
basically, right?
Right.
It's only
right.
Chamber used to update it.
Yeah.
Right.
Because Lonnie used to do that. Lonnie used to update it weekly, I think.
So was it actually her voice on the radio?
Okay. Yeah. For on whatever she put on there.
Okay.
So I don't know where, I don't know where in the process we stopped. I mean, the chamber stopped, the PD started, or
who owns it?
I don't know.
You know what? Let's get some information. We'll agendize it for next month, maybe. And
I think that's
an awesome idea.
Bill Pierce to come in and explain it to us.
That's a good idea.
Because he's the one that runs it.
Bill, if you're awake,
it's his voice on it.
I think that. I think it's a good idea, and it could be a resource for us. It's there. What I said in my email back was that before we worry about promoting it and getting it out, which I think is necessary, let's make sure it's current.
Right.
And, you know, we're going to direct all these people to go to it because, I mean, even when there's not an event, it could even possibly, and this is certainly the chamber's call, but could go on, you know, on top of the billboard too. But if it was, it would have to be something we really want people to tune to. I think one of the things that could be done really easily, because this is a changing audience. It's not something that people are going to, you know, listen to every week that are locals necessarily. But we could very easily have a professional announcer, you know, have an introduction about Morro Bay and give people resources on where they, you know, give them the visitor center address, give them the website, talk about, you know, maybe a 3-minute overview, which is already done. I mean, we've got that in our video. I could do that for a few $100 to have some professional do that. And then that alone would be, you know, really high quality. It would be professionally done. And then there would be a pod in there that, you know, the police could use or whoever to update it and keep it current. But for the most part, if we're really just trying to grab that tourist and get them off the road and give them some information, that could be done, you know, with a just almost like a message on hold kind of a thing that, you know, when they would go to that, there would be this loop that would continue over and over again.
I would think, and again, we're kind of discussing this, and while we can't take any real action on it, I would think that it would be a wonderful opportunity to just flat out tell folks, if they tune in there, to get off the highway. I mean, just come right out and invite them, get off the highway and see us. Because
that was what
because
Bill
the signs
said, yeah.
Sure don't allow us to do that very well.
I think that was really where Councilman Pierce was coming from on this, is that, you know, this is an opportunity to lure people, to get them to get off the road and tell them what's here. So that would make even more sense of why we'd want to have this professional 3 or 4 minute introduction, you know, let them know how to get off and what they're going to see.
Well, and I think what's important, and maybe if I get a chance, I'll do it today myself, what's the range? You know, where do you pick it up? Where do you lose it? And because if it's, you know...
I believe it's... I was talking to David Garth about a radio that they picked up at Cal Poly, and we were talking about how it overlaps, and theirs overlap to Cuesta. And apparently ours goes off to Cuesta also, so it kind of both radio stations overlap that, and then they go up past I don't think it goes all the way up to Cambria, but it goes
you
up
can pick it up Cayucas. In Cayucas?
I believe you can get it to Cayucas as you're going over the hill. So there's a range, you know, and we could have somebody scream and say stop.
I think that's important, that if you have enough time, I mean, depending on how soon you can tune into it, depends on what you should put on it.
Exactly, because if you at 60 miles an hour, you cover the 3 miles between Cayucos and Morro Bay in about the time you would have had to listen to that thing.
I think, too, that you could, you know, we talked about it. This is another suggestion that I had, is it could go on the website, you know, say when you come into our area, you know, be sure and tune, you know, for our latest updates. And I think part of this is, and I could be wrong, but I think communities have these because it's emergency stations. So if something happens, you have the ability. And I can tell you that where we have a little vacation home in the mountains, you know, I would tune to that thing and it would be repetitive and I would never listen to it. But as soon as the day fire occurred and you wanted to have updates on how close this fire was to your house, you listened to that thing more than you'd ever listen to any top radio station.
Well, another thing then that would bring that up is, for example, and this was one of the tourist things that happened this summer, was the day of the infamous gridlock. Did the police, I don't know, chime in on that station and say, yeah, folks, do not exit Morro Bay Boulevard, you know, and would we use it for event control in the event that we had an event like that? And I guess that would be it.
Well, if it was advertised, where to locate that on the AM dial, I think it's 1620 or something like that. But, you know, it would be certainly a source to...
Well, let's see what we can dig into. On and absolutely... explain to Greg.
Well, I know we've paid one of them already, so their accounting system is flawed.
It's being taken care of, but anyway, they're very willing to want to do this again, and I don't know that we specifically budgeted in our media plan to do this again next spring, and so I don't know if we need to agendize it to talk about it, but I don't know what I can't tell you what the actual numbers ended up being, over the coupons that were collected, but boy, the exposure was incredible for the amount of money. So I don't know.
Did we take that out of the fire sale or the contingency last year?
Last year we did, and I thought we were going to, but I do not remember the budget subcommittee when we were talking about this coming year actually, you know, taking that up. So do you remember?
Yeah, I think that it would be good to.
So we want to agendize formalizing a plan to do the coupon guide outreach for next year.
Well, we sure have enough time. That if we need to do some changing because we want it as a priority.
Yeah, I would think now would be the time to talk about it because, you know, we have that contingency fund and we've already dipped $1,000 into it to pay for the increase in
right.
the visitor's guide. So it would be good to earmark that as those dollars.
What's the name of that specific promotion again?
Travel
coupon guide.
Thank you.
It was $2,000 or $3,000, wasn't it?
It was $1,500 a month. We did it twice.
Twice, $3,000. Yeah. All right, so we have that on the agenda. Moving ahead then, thank you, John. We come to the one thing about one of the budget items we had in the advertising budget was that it's the YouTube and web thing. And with events like the Avocado and Margarita Festival, I mean, is there a point where we'd want to begin to start that? Because it does depend on, it's not a static thing, it depends on users. Is there a formal plan, or would we have to come up with something to start?
To be honest with you, we earmarked it in the budget. I haven't really looked at it doing it. I was thinking more like probably, you know, in spring. I think anytime we can get footage. What I originally was hoping to do with that is some sort of a, you know, something on our website. We would encourage people to file a commercial about Morro Bay on YouTube. And then if it was, then we'd have a contest. And if their particular commercial won, then they would, you know, get an overnight stay, and we'd really buff them out with dinner and everything, you know, full getaway. The purpose of that is to get very positive things on YouTube about Morro Bay. Because if you go on there right now, you might see somebody driving, you know, in their car, you know, with somebody's face just on the screen. I mean, there's nothing really very professional. But that would be the purpose, and it's a good example of that. And I had a colleague that his nephew was actually participating in it. Was this Heinz commercial? So what they did is it's a little bigger effort than ours. It was actually shown on the Today Show, and their commercial ends up being on national television. But what they did is they had this contest so people could file their own commercials for Heinz ketchup. Well, what happened is now they've got, you know, 20. Really great commercials on the website that people go to, and they could actually vote on them. And we could even do that, where we could figure out some way for people to actually vote on their favorite commercial. So it's going to take a little development, but that was kind of the original idea behind that.
Here's the YouTube link. Bob's already found us the YouTube Morro Bay football, surfing seals and otters. Afternoon in Morro Bay. There you go, Bob. That looks like an amateur video. Kayaking on the Central Coast with a family. Is this what we're looking? Oof, not very good quality.
A little little technique
there.
That was a
transition effect, actually.
Yes. So they just put together their stills, their little vacation. Because that's what made me think with the Harbor Festival coming up, that'd be the first event where there's live stuff that really motivates
right.
sound and image rather than just still pictures.
Bob, if you could go to, and I'm not sure what, if you just go into Google maybe and just type Heinz ketchup commercials.
Heinz.
Maybe Heinz ketchup contest or something like that. Maybe it'll take us to it. And I suppose it's still on there even though the contest has been done. And the person that I knew actually took second, so they got $5,700. The first prize person got $65,000 and was on the Today Show.
Hungry for fame, make the next great commercial. There it is on your left.
Yeah, you could click on that.
Get started here.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere, there you go.
Yeah, it's the show. It's the show.
Because this is the idea, is to
click
have
on,
people create
just click
their
on
own
memories, because I've seen
Morro Bay memory video or something along those lines.
This is sort of the format that I was thinking, where we would have this contest, and so then this would be, we would have these different commercials posted on our site.
Cute.
No, how was it? It's perfect. Simply perfect. Give me some of that.
So anyway, I mean, it's just there's
cute.
There's some other ones on there that are even better. But there's one that where they go to a biker bar and they all have this musical number, which is pretty classic. But that's the idea, where we would have people actually going out and making a commercial, filing their story, and the other part of it could just be simply a travelogue too, where we just encourage people to file their, you know, their experiences. But as you can see, if it's a contest and there's a prize associated with it, then you get the videographers involved, as opposed to somebody that just has a Super 8, you know,
yeah,
old camera.
Yeah. No, I like the idea, and I think that's why I mentioned. I don't know how long it would take you to work up a program to get the website place that holds it that says enter our contest. We'd have to kind of, maybe that would be a public relations subcommittee thing to sit down and work on, the Morro Bay picture, Morro Bay video.
Oh, yeah, I think it's going to take a little bit of work to pull it off, so we'll definitely need some help on.
All right, well, I will put that down as a subcommittee item, which brings us to the public relations subcommittee report, which, to my knowledge, unless you all met while I was away last month, has nothing to report. But now we have a reason to meet and discuss this, so it might even be a meeting that John might be at, because it would be relating specifically
sure.
to this. So we'll try and put that together in the coming weeks.
Okay.
Okay, and moving on to the website committee, and there was going to be some follow-up involving the lists of names and the...
No, we did not have a meeting this month. I do have a question about attendance. If we have more than three people from this committee come to our subcommittee, is that
you can't.
Legal?
You can't. No.
How many can we have?
Three.
Three.
You can't have a quorum.
You can have outsiders and
That's
consultants and experts.
Yeah.
And
okay.
I guess you can have former committee members if Billy or an Ann Reeves want
right.
to show up. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, that would.
And again, I think that the best for me is that it's good that we have the subcommittee, because they can get together and actually formulate ideas and then come with me to help them execute them. But anybody ever sees anything on the site that they think needs to be corrected or changed, just email me, because all of our sets of eyes, you know, are better. I mean, I've already notified my web guy to make sure he takes off the Avocado Margarita Festival after Saturday, you know, just things like that. But it's just time flies by so quick
right.
sometimes that sometimes the stuff does get missed. And sometimes links get broken that we don't even know about that need to go back in and get fixed. And I try to go on there and monitor it as best I can, but if anybody sees anything that they think that needs to be done right away, just let me know.
All right. So that was comments. So the web subcommittee will get back to us next month if there's any action to report. Moving on, unfinished business, none. New business, a discussion of the I heart or love or however one's okay. New business. I didn't agendize it, so.
I think this was a discussion of the word tourist versus visitors. When we do the new badges, whether we're going to use the word tourists, and is tourist really a word that is negative, or does it have connotations that we want to change to make people visitors who visit our city? And I think that's what the discussion was regarding. If we're going to have this campaign this year and make new badges, what do we want to put on them?
Oh, okay. Any thoughts on that?
I'd like to see it left alone.
My visitors, the only thing when I hear visitors, and that's because maybe I visited Roswell, New Mexico one time too many, but the visitor, seriously, they sell the inflatable alien doll with the big black bug eyes, and that's, they call them the visitors. And there's a notion of alienness to visitor. That just somehow sticks in me. But
I don't know that I think of tourists in a negative connotation. I don't know if anyone has cultural references they can bring up that.
Well, my thinking on it would be this, that if local people, the people who are going to wear these badges and greet their visitors, visitors is a warmer term. Someone came into the visitor center a few months back while I was there and claimed to be a PR expert of many years' experience and said that in many communities, and he pointed to me the fact that we call our center not a tourist center but a visitor center, and that visitors is a warmer
term is stronger because it's saying we, you know, we love tourists. I mean, I think if you, it's, I think it's diluted a little bit by saying we love visitors. You know, I think it's it, because it is, it softens it. I think the tourist part of it actually being sort of negative is the turnaround is that we, you know, we love them. I think that we're, what we ought to do is to try to figure out, and I don't have the answer today, but some other things that would make this program stronger, you know, in the sense of really educating people. We've talked about maybe working out something with the Bay News or the Morro Bay paper or both, where we have a report ongoing about how significant tourism is to the town and why people need to embrace them and be welcoming to them, because they pay for the pavement of the roads, they pay for police and fire, and that's always been an ongoing thing, to let educating people, more so than just let everybody wearing a button, is getting it the next level to say, and this awareness campaign that could be done to say, these people pay a lot for the services that you utilize, you know, and it's important for all of us to get together and bring them here.
Are we going to do the button campaign again? I think is the first question. What goes on it would be the next question.
So, and, well, I know one thing I never did follow up on, and I talked to Peter about this, is not just the button, but we talked about maybe getting it made as a decal sticker for store windows that could go in the front of shop windows, and I should go and get a price from someone who does that kind of...
David, I just recently made static clings for my business, and I can information to you. We did a bit of research on them. And I think that John's right. I mean, I think everybody's right. I mean, the reality is we need to decide, number one, is this a campaign that we want to take on? And then number two, what does that represent and what time period? I mean, the reality is we are going into the winter, and maybe it makes sense to shelve the campaign and bring it out again maybe next April or May when we would do all of the signage.
I love them more now than ever.
That's true.
Yeah.
But there are a few. But there are fewer of them here to see that, so I don't know.
Well, then the question would be, maybe it's, you have to build it over time. I mean, the winter might be a time to actually build and discuss this campaign in a way that it really flourishes by the time April rolls around. For example, I think John's idea about the positive press is, okay, we've had Labor Day, we've had our roundup of a very successful summer. Maybe now is the time to get an op-ed in the Sun Bulletin or the paper actually saying, hey, you know, this summer, this is what Morro Bay needs. This is what is going to pave the roads and fill the potholes and do the stuff for the coming winter, and so we need a positive. I know today's Tribune was chock full of tourists. You had the sinking of the ship reef story. You had the money for the VCB stories. I mean, it's three stories in today's Tribune alone.
And the fair.
So maybe it's a good time, and I would do that. I don't know if you're authorized to do that, is to write an op-ed as a member of the committee and submit it.
Of course.
Are we allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Sure.
David, why don't we put this on our agenda for the public relations subcommittee,
and
then
very good,
what we
I
could do is agenda. Investigate taking it to the next level and a timeline and the details so that it's maybe better executed.
I just, again, and I said this when we originally rolled it out, and I thought it was a great idea, but I just think I've always felt like it needs to be backed up with some substance. You know, it's one thing to wear the buttons, but if people are asked, well, do you really love tourists? I mean, I think we need to get, you know, the city really loving tourists, because if you go on TripAdvisor or something like that, you know, one of the things that I think a goal would be, I love coming here because I'm treated like, you know, like a friend, not a tourist, you know, that kind of a thing. And a lot of the reasons why people come, and it's been discussed, and I know Susan's brought it up, is that this is a small town feel, you know, that it's unique in America anymore to come to a little local beach town and have this small town experience. Well, part of that small town experience is being friendly. And that's really, you know, that's the thing that could really change over time business. I mean, if people really came here and felt like you know, like, and again, maybe that, you know, it's discover our better nature, but I mean, again, you have to back it up, the friendliest place on earth or something like that, but you got to back that up. And I'm not saying that people aren't friendly here, but the campaign needs to have some substance behind it and let people know why they need to be really embrace these people, because that could really help business if people came here and then they told five other friends, you know, when you go there, I mean, it's just great. I mean, people treat you so nice and they stop you on the street and ask if you need directions. You know, those kinds of things is what make people come back.
So, John, what if we combine the YouTube idea with the I Love Tourists idea and we go around with the camera and interview a whole bunch of residents and shop owners about why they love tourists?
Mm-hmm.
And then we can put that on our website and on YouTube.
Yeah.
I love tourists because.
Actually, yes, there's a winning video. The contest isn't for the tourists. The contest is for a local business that puts out their commercial as to why they love the tourists the most.
Well, again, I think that's valuable, but it's the other way around. It's the tourists saying why they like coming to Morro Bay. We know the businesses love tourists because it makes them money. You know, that's already a given. But I think what we need is maybe testimonials from people saying that, you know, hey, this is just one reason I come here is that small town feel and people are so friendly. But my point is we need to make sure that that's occurring. And how we do that, you know, is through, I think, education and just, you know, it's almost an internal promotion as well as an external one. We need to get everybody on board with this and make this a really friendly place. And again, I'm not saying that it's not, but, you know, I guess I would ask, you know, the tourists. I mean, maybe, you know, a little survey to know how friendly this place is.
Something I'm going to weigh in, something that struck me today that in your discussion was when we talk about the fall, we talk about September, October, November, and we talk about those times when the tourists leave, and it's a great time to come to Morro Bay, and I think we need to keep that in mind, because if we're talking about it's a great time when the tourists leave, is that an inviting thing to say? Something to keep in mind.
In one place. If we try to do this just on a normal weekday, I mean, you know, you're going to get some. But the only thing that I just to play devil's advocate is sort of chaotic, you know, to try to get that done during a function like that too. And a lot of people don't want to be bothered, or you know, it's really difficult to. You have to go through probably 20 of them to get one good one.
Well, because unless you follow them to the margarita section of our, then get them as they walk out. We have the lighted boat parade coming up in December also. So I mean, it's not. There's other things that
right.
we promote.
But I was going to say, and maybe AGP can take care of this, but, you know, in the past, if we want to cover the, and I don't know whether my videographer, I've got other people I could probably get, but if she's available, I mean, do you want to get footage of the Margarita Festival and of the new footage of the Harbor Festival? So maybe we ought to, you know, budget $1,000 to try to cover the next set of events that we have and just get the footage like we've done in the past.
Do we have to agenda?
But I don't know whether that's going to be, you know, it's almost where you need a man on the street kind of a thing. I mean, I was thinking more of the raw footage than doing the interview thing.
Although Bob, as we saw from the last time, Bob is pretty good. People respond well to him. He's a friendly good friend.
Bob, are you going to try to get some video for the Margarita Festival? Is that now kind of?
I'll make it a priority now.
That would be wonderful, because we probably in some ways maybe dropped the ball a little bit, not planning on this a little bit more ahead of time to be able to have you do it, John, or have your folks do it, because I think it's critical. I mean, we did so well with the Kite Festival and the Jazz Festival and getting that stuff. I think it's really critical that we capture this if we can.
Especially a person dressed in a giant avocado walking around the streets.
Do you have
of Morro
a thing
Bay.
About stuffed avocados or something, David?
I, just, yeah, I wish I could afford
maybe we
them.
We get some footage of inside the avocado.
I want to know about the kind of person who I'd like a behind the scenes. I just think there's a whole making of thing that's at work here. But no, I think that'd be great. And if we had some of that footage and you could share, and that would help us get some fun stuff.
So where do we leave our so the
public relations subcommittee
going to
was
take
gonna
up,
agendize
take up the, okay.
focus on the outreach campaign.
It's not too early.
Another new business. I guess we move to a discussion of a new ideas. Does anyone have a new idea?
I think that if we could, and I'd like to, I don't know if it's see what the committee thinks about whether we need to agendize this right away, But as most of you probably know, and if you've read in the paper at all, that Monday night at the council meeting, city staff is going to recommend moving forward with the proposal on the lease site down at the Outrigger to that of a conference facility, seating, you know, over 400 people upstairs from where Zanies is now in the future. And to that end, I believe that if they do adopt that and allow them to move forward with that operation, that is going to create a whole new job for the promotions committee. And so I don't know if it feels premature, to want to agendize and start talking about this.
It's going to be presented to them Monday night. And what action would they take?
They would approve the proposal for the conference facility, and that would allow negotiations to begin on the actual lease, and then they'd come back with a concept plan for approval, if I'm not mistaken.
I would suggest, you're correct, that's basically the action that they may be taking, but I would suggest to wait to agendize it until you know what the action has taken. They may refer it to further study. So I would say certainly hold off.
And then because it's happening next week, for us to agendize it to discuss our support or whatever of the idea of a conference facility would probably be after the fact, because they will have already made a decision one way or the other. But if you have a personal decision or personal opinion, you might show up Monday night and express that, because it's going to be a new business item. Okay.
Ed, I have one question. Last week, last meeting, we had a discussion of the Ships to Sea. Is there any update
ships
on
Reef?
Ships to Reef? I'm
it's
sorry.
In the Tribune today.
Well, they're planning on what's it called, Harms and something. They're titling the meeting taking place on the 27th down at the PG&E Community Center. Rick Algert, our harbor director, is going to be there speaking, and several other folks. And I think it's probably pretty huge. I know that I spoke to Eleanor Rewertz from Ships to Reefs, and she's they're really looking forward to this. So they're moving forward. They're going to have this one last meeting. They're already putting in their applications. Getting the application process going and move forward with the project.
Does it look strong for Morro Bay's acceptance of it?
Well,
related to ships again, I wasn't able to, although I wanted to attend where the presentation was made on the tall ship that actually would be here all the time. And I got an email from the gentleman wanting to get together. Can you give me any, obviously you were there for that presentation. Mm-hmm. Is that a viable thing? Or?
He was just kicking out, number one, the plan wasn't to bring one here. The plan was to build one.
Uh-huh.
And so he actually has the blueprints, the plans from the Golden Hind, and permission to reconstruct the Golden Hind. And so, this was just a big idea thing going mm-hmm. on. He's moving forward. He just wanted to know if the group that was there was interested in seeing it go forward, and everybody said yeah. why not? So there wasn't a downside. It was just more of a question of where are you going to build this thing, and
right.
And that. So
I think that a long time ago
it happens.
Phil May, who works with me, I think he brought that idea, or at least through me, I think I talked about that, and that's done. It's been done successfully, like on the East Coast, where you have and it actually is a good time right now because of the construction business slowing down. And you actually, had some people that were slow and had time to be able to, work on the boat. And what they did is they had a webcam on it, and people could watch the progress of the ship being built. And then eventually, you have all these promotional opportunities, PR opportunities from, the idea, the concept, and the fact that it's being done. And then, of course, the big, huge one is when it's launched and it sails. And I think I might have brought this up. When I lived in Costa Mesa, there was a guy actually building one in his front yard. And there were some people that liked it and some people that didn't. And it took him years to build it because he basically was doing it all on his own. But when he finished, and I had since moved, but I saw it in the LA Times, and he launched this thing and he sailed it around the world. And it took him literally probably, I don't know, as long as I lived there. I lived there 10 years, and you'd go by, and some years there would be nothing done. And then, you know, then he'd get a little more money, and there'd be more done. But eventually it happened. And I think it'd be great. But, again, I don't know where the funding comes from. And, you know, but if you – one of the things, one of the ways it was done on the East Coast was there were volunteer carpenters that did this. And they donated their time because it was slow. And, you know, this would have never been able to get done a couple years ago when the building industry was going crazy. But maybe now there's this little lull that maybe there's an opportunity.
Well, we'll see where he takes it. He's definitely going to hook up with the Morro Bay Maritime Museum folks because we were kind of confused as opposed to Morro Bay Marine Museum versus Maritime Museum. And so, and we know we did get kind of an update from the Maritime Museum people. They're still working with the city to try to figure out the, you know, logistics of putting a building there with all the underground infrastructure, sewer stuff going on right where they want to put it, and which is tough. So they're, but anyway, they're going to hook up, and we'll, you know, hopefully we'll follow up, keep following up with these guys and see how they're doing.
Two things. Bob Scott, there's an online poll about this at the Tribune today. And now let's just see how we're polling. Just for the sake of argument, it says, sounds like a good idea is one of the, should a two retired war vessels be sunk off the coast? And you have some choices. Now, just so we can see the results so far, Bob, let's put sounds like a good idea. No, yeah, I think you have to vote to see the results. So, no, it gives it. Sounds like a good idea is at 71%. And only it would be okay for environmental reasons, but not for tourism, is only at 5%. And 24% oppose. So, no.
21 votes, yeah, it's not many.
But we can check in on this poll later in the day and see if it changes any.
When did that go up?
This is today's article. It's
oh, okay.
The 20th,
so
it's, okay. In comments, you could say only if it's in Morro Bay.
Right.
Right. I mean, the fact that they actually, as a separate question, have would be okay for environmental reasons but not for tourism is exactly the kind of boundary, and I'd have to read the rest of the article.
I don't really get that question,
why
really,
the two
to be honest
can't
with you.
Be, no, why the two, it's what ecotourism is about, and maybe a letter to the editor will need to be sent in. But the other question was an infrastructure question. I'm glad you mentioned that. It's now the 20th of September, and according to the last meeting I attended in July, where the presentation said by now the roundabout should be like kind of pretty underway, and I had a question for the city. They had told us like it was going to start today after Labor Day. I did see a truck and an orange cone out there at one point, but
they're back into Caltrans, and I don't know if you want to, because I've talked to Bill about it, but do you want to?
You have an update, Andrea?
I can tell you that I'm cautious because I'm not sure we're still under discussion of new ideas, but I will tell you in terms of the roundabout. I'm sorry. I'm thinking Harbor Walk.
No roundabout.
I'm going to give that over to Ed Biagini because I think
okay.
There is not a lot of new information.
In a nutshell, we asked. I called Bill Boucher last week just to kind of give the forum an update on what was going on and kind of kid him about this whole starting the day after Labor Day thing. And he said, well, what happened is that Caltrans has came up with a couple of other after the rainy season or whatever. So it's kind of like stay tuned. But that's why it hasn't started.
It's going to be a dry winter.
It better.
All right. Well, just so we know, I mean, we thought it was going to clear up by Thanksgiving and maybe not. Thank you for the update on that. A quick thing I noticed, a new idea. Have we ever had a sandcastle festival? In Morro Bay?
No, just what happens during the Harbor Festival a little bit, and then of course I don't know what they don't call it a festival, but they get the big huge sand sculptures going on 4th of July in Cayucas, so that's as close as I know about with the sandcastle festival.
Toss it out there, and the only other new idea I have, and this came up, and I'll be brief and have a handout for folks. I was at one of the Roses Landing Business Forum meetings about 2 months ago. And the subject was going to be the slow sea, but they didn't show up that day. However, it was an interesting conversation. And one of the questions that came up had to do with the new building project going on, which we saw on the web, was the Vesterfeld project was on. They had a YouTube clip. What would it look like? What would Morro Bay look like? And this was the discussion that came out. What is the design criteria? What will our main street look like? What would our shopping Morro Bay Boulevard look like? Is there? And I think what came up was that there was no answer. No one really had was there a unified plan? What would a future building like the one that Mr. Vesterveld's building, would there be criteria for how they would be designed? How would we have a
distinct looking downtown that would be recognizable, or would it be? And I thought about that, and I'll just pass out something for you all to read at your convenience. You may or may not have studied architecture, but there was a very famous book written in the 1967 called Learning from Las Vegas by the architect Robert Venturi, who was known for some rather, not many famous buildings, but some unusual buildings. And his thesis in his book Learning from Las Vegas was that the initial response of a lot of architects and master planners and city planners is to come up with a very unified thing, and they want everything to look a certain way, and the bricks will be such. And you'll see this in Santa Barbara. You'll see it in other places. But that what made Las Vegas beautiful and successful in its own way being the important criteria, is the eclectic nature of it, the fact that it's not a unified thing. And he subtitled his essay, and I'll pass these out, Commercial Values and Commercial Methods, and it's entitled Learning from Las Vegas, A Significance for A&P Parking Lots. And it was the first real essay, and I'll send these the other way. So. I made 8 or 7.
So we'll send one more. That way you can go that way. Thank you.
There should be 3 right going that way. And what I'll just read from the introduction is, substance for a writer consists not merely of those realities he thinks he discovers. It consists even more of those realities which have been made available to him by literature and the idioms of his own day, and by the images that still have vitality in the literature of the past. Stylistically, a writer can express his feeling about his substance either by imitation, if it sits well with him, or parody, if he doesn't. And that's what gets into it, is going down to the third paragraph. But to gain insight from the commonplace is nothing new. Fine art often follows folk architecture. Roman architects of the 18th century discovered existing and conventional architecture. The idea being is, does, to the question those people asked that day, and again, I invite you to read this at your convenience, do we need to have a uniform thing? The people who were seeking to say, well, what is the look of Morro Bay? The look may very well be that it looks like a small seaside town, and that is the look that is unique to Morro Bay, and that we may not need to see. Now, if you go inside this, you'll find that the Las Vegas Beautification Committee paid his firm a good deal of money to come up with a plan, which he put on one page, and it's rather simple. On the left side, he has, and I think this is an important thing to remember, a message to the Strip Beautification Committee, not the image of the Champs-Élysées. It's not trying to make Las Vegas into Paris, it would not be trying to make, say, Morro Bay into Monterey or into Carmel or to something that it isn't. That gas stations are okay, that signs are okay. And like you said, if you were going to pave the medium should be paved in gold, because that would be appropriate for Las Vegas. But that using plants in a desert that were not drought tolerant would be a bad idea. And this is going back 40 years. I mean, this is before even the environmental movement or Earth Day that they were looking at this stuff. So anyway, I just invite you, for those who might ponder that question as to what would be the future look of Morro Bay and where would development go, if it's to be a style, if it's to be a postcard image that people recognize, keeping in mind, as he suggested, that throwing away the past is not always necessarily a good idea. And I just, you know, it's because I didn't get the teaching job at Cuesta. You're all going to be getting my lecture notes on this subject. So
I just have a comment on it. I think that I think every down
this might have to do with, as people begin to develop lots, should another development come available, like the Vesmerville property, you know, what would be the nature of that if the rest of the street was all still your shop, a Susan shop, and other small shops, how these would fit together. And it's funny you mentioned that, John. I didn't make a copy for you. Well, I do have a copy of this for you. But he says right here, yes, learning from the landscape is a way of being revolutionary, not the obvious way, which is, of course, to tear Paris down and begin again, as was suggested in the 1920s. So obviously, yes, that is.
But I think the other part of it is, gets to be economics, too. You know, and there's like, I know with Pismo's, and I've always thought that this was really a bad thing, because part of it, in the guidelines, you have, you know, continuity with the neighborhood or continuity with the other buildings, but then also in the same rules, sameness should not be necessarily the rule. So, like, they contradict each other. But the reality is that if you're going to build something that's exactly like what's there, it probably will never get built, because economically it's not viable to only have a single-story storefront. you know, people don't make any money on that, so they're not going to build it.
Just for clarification, I think the reason that this came up was the discussion of Old Town and in the Vision 2020 document that the city's put out. And one of the things was, what is Old Town? Define Old Town, you know, geographically and all, because that's part of what we were looking at as promoting as a you know, as a destination is, you know, that look. So that's where this came from, and those discussions are continuing on the 2020 subcommittees as we move forward. So.
Thank you. Yeah, that was interesting.
You're not going to read the whole
thing.
No,
I'm not reading it.
And we are.
It's funny,
I think
it's funny, though.
We're getting kind of close into a discussion versus what the agenda item is, so I would caution you, and we should probably move on in the near future.
No, moving on. I just had the train of thought there for a second. John used the word, by the way, funky, which in itself, I also had a long discussion with someone about this, and we decided that actually Morro Bay wasn't funky. Avila, as you say, was funky, but we, that's why I chose this word, were eclectic. This is even the semantics of how one should choose to market the city to alternative audiences would involve choosing careful word like that. Any future agenda items to be declared? You have a list so far, Andrea?
Should have two that I know of. The travel coupon guide one, and then the tourist information radio station.
Correct, and then you're going to give the item one of the items to the public relations subcommittee that we just talked about.
The tourist button.
We got that there. All right. Any other? Then, seeing that, we will declare this meeting adjourned here this morning. Thank you all very much. We'll
see you, David,
in a month.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the joint meeting of the City Council and the Planning Commission on Monday, September 17th. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we're going to be meeting with the Council and the Planning Commission until about 5, and then the Planning Commission will resume their normal agenda. So let the record show that all Council members are present, and I will turn it over to Nancy Johnson.
Thank you, and welcome to our joint meeting again. We will call the Planning Commission section of this meeting to order and note that Bill Woodson and Michael Lucas are not with us this evening, this afternoon. Pledge of Allegiance. Janice, good job for you.
Accept the agenda.
You seem to have a question.
I think it's about the continuation of that one.
Okay. We're okay. All right, Mr. Ream.
I move we accept the agenda.
I'll second.
On favor?
Aye.
All right. Do we have public comment? Members of the audience wishing to address the council or commission on matters other than scheduled hearing items may do so when recognized by the mayor by standing and stating their name and address. Comments should be limited to 3 minutes. I would say, seeing none, that's done. All right. We're ready to move on, Madam Mayor.
Okay, what we're going to do this afternoon is to review the parking management plan. And the idea with all of this is we're going to hear a report from our consultant who prepared the plan. And then we will be free to ask questions about it and voice our items of concern or disagreement or additional items or things we do agree on. And the goal of this meeting is that by the end of it, we have some consensus on what parts of the report we accept. If we accept the whole thing, that's fine too. And what parts we would like to give back to the consultants to give some further investigation. And the purpose of all of this is to let all of us have a chance to weigh in on these things. And I'm asking that all of us be very brief in our comments so that we can keep a dialogue going that is productive. Questions? Nobody? Okay. All right. So, Bruce, I'll turn it over to you. And
well, Madam Mayor, I think you summarized it, you know, that's what the goal of the meeting is. We've got Charlie Klaus here. And
fresh for you some of the essential background technical components about the report. Oh, she's already changed the slide. Thank you. Just a rundown on the purpose and goals of this report. First was to define the current inventory of your parking supply and to do a study to determine the status of demand in the parking study area. We essentially presented these results at an early community workshop in July of last year. Next was to evaluate the current parking standards that are currently in place in the city ordinances and to study those and possibly make recommendations to modify them as appropriate. To assess alternative parking solutions, what kinds of techniques might be out there that could be used to better manage your parking situation. Also to develop feasible action plan and implementation strategies, and this topic was the focus of a second workshop that we held in November of last year. Next was to develop a financial plan. This component of the document identifies various local, state, and funding or federal funding sources and provides some kind of order of magnitude cost estimates, if you will, for the essential components of the recommended action plan. And then, of course, to actually develop a document, the management plan itself, and to use this entire process as a way to educate the community about parking. We began by defining the study area, which is shown on this graphic. This conforms to the parking district boundary maps as are currently contained in your general plan and draft zoning ordinances. The study area captures the Embarcadero corridor from roughly north along the Coleman Drive area, south to the boat launch ramp at the southerly end, and obviously includes the downtown core, which consists primarily of the commercial uses which serve the local area visitors and tourists. The study area here shows the by numbered blocks the areas within which we did the supply and demand survey. One of the essential components of assessing the existing conditions, along with looking at such things as land use, signage, time-restricted parking, your transit components, and whatnot, was merely taking a good inventory of the supply of parking. We looked at on-street spaces and off-street spaces, both public and private. And from the total available spaces, I would just point out that the city of Morro Bay has a healthy percentage of spaces of which are underneath your control, those being the on-street spaces and the spaces that are within publicly designated parking lots. You have about 72% of those spaces.
I have a question at this point.
Yes.
When I was reviewing the report to get ready for tonight's meeting, I see that this slide disagrees with the table on page 5 of your report. So you've made some changes in the
Well,
total
yes,
available.
And I apologize. I realize that, too. And the slide here is showing a count of parking spaces before we got direction to add another little area in the study area. And I apologize. I can the table that is in the book shows the accurate number. This is an old slide, and I apologize for that.
And a follow-up.
It's still, with the addition, it still worked out to be about 72% of all the spaces are in city control.
Okay. And so when we talk about availability and for our needs as policy setters, we're really looking at those that are only under city control. I'm not looking at these private lots.
Well, I guess in one sense that is true. However, what we wanted to do was try to inventory what all the available supply was, where visitors, customers, whatever, have the ability to park. And so that was why it was included in the this actual supply survey.
And I could actually understand that at a place like Wavelengths on the Embarcadero. I